Not all of our minisodes need to be from listeners. In fact, places or lesser-known cases can sometimes take us to dark realms. Hello everyone and welcome to the first official Dark Realms of Season 24. Now today's Dark Realm is indeed one that I didn't have to travel too far to locate, and it's a suggestion put forward by one of our Patreons. Now, before we get into it, that's an example of what being a Patreon can do. On top of the ad-free early access to debuts and finales, and of course, being part of that wonderful community, you also get to suggest episodes, you get two extra podcasts every week for the Patreons on our highest tier, and for the other tiers, the very least you get is ad-free episodes. So if that sounds like your thing, all of the details are in the show notes or go to patreon.com/thedarkparanormal. But right now, join me as we take a look at somewhere literally 3 miles away from me right now, Bowl Street, or Time Slip Central. Now, to understand why Bowl Street has become one of Liverpool's most quietly unsettling locations, you need to begin with where it sits. At the top stands St. Luke's Church, known locally as the Bombed Out Church. Why? Well, because it's a building left open to the sky ever since the Blitz of World War II. A place where the church's walls externally remain, but the roof is gone. The clock forever showing the hour and the time that the bombs were dropped. And at the bottom of Bowl Street is the Lyceum, once England's first subscription library, later a private gentleman's club, and now something entirely different, more in tune with the bohemian atmosphere of the street in general. It's now become a place to be seen if you want to be part of the artistic elite. If you walk down of a Sunday morning, you will see queue after queue of people just trying to get in for breakfast at places. Though, in between the bombed out church and the Lyceum is a street that feels less built and more layered, as though each version of it never fully replaced the last. Because beneath that very surface is something much, much older. Bold Street takes its name from Jonas Bold, a merchant, a banker, and a slave trader. This land was known as the Ropeworks. That area still is. The long slope would allow for long, narrow strips where rope was stretched and twisted to be made ready for ships. Ships that would leave Liverpool, but never return empty. You see, by the late 18th century, Liverpool had become central to the transatlantic slave trade. Warehouses nearby processed goods that moved through human hands and human suffering. And even after abolition of slavery, the ties didn't end. The city's wealth continued through cotton, tied directly to enslaved labor in the American South. In 1864, Liverpool even hosted a fundraiser to support the American Confederacy. A detail often overlooked. A reminder that some histories don't end cleanly, nor where you'd expect. So, Bold Street itself is not exactly neutral ground. It is shaped by commerce, but by exploitation, and by the quiet decision to move forward without fully looking back. Today feels different. Independent shops, cafes, music, culture, a place full of life, creativity, expression. And it should be mentioned that during that period not so long ago, when statues in the West of people who had anything to do with slavery or anything else abhorrent were torn down. Members of the Liverpool Black community were asked if they would like to either rename certain streets or remove the statues of certain slave traders, and they decided not to. Instead of eradicating the history, they decided to educate. So, where the plaque may have said, "This merchant, not mentioning slavery, donated X to this school, to that place, built this hospital, etc.," the Black community suggested to place an additional plaque that explained where their wealth come from. That being the trade of Black slaves. Which, to me anyway, as a Scouser, which is a term we give to people from Liverpool, is the most Scouse thing our Black community could have done. To educate where they could have had the opportunity to eradicate. And it's no surprise. Liverpool has one of the oldest Black communities in Europe, going back to the 18th century. So there will be generations of Black Scousers much older than my lineage, which is third generation Irish. Liverpool also has the oldest Chinese community in Europe, going back to the 19th century. All of this, of course, down to its dock. And there is a reason for the Chinese reference. And that is because just to the left of the bombed out church, if you do not go straight ahead down Bow Street, you immediately enter Liverpool's Chinatown. Strange coincidence? Yes, more than likely. But a very interesting one at that. You may have noticed, but I have great pride in my city, the melting pot of culture that it is. But we, of course, are focusing today on Bow Street. Yes, it's a place full of creativity, expression, but underneath, there are voids. There are old structures. Things found in restorations of the properties, such as a freshwater well that was discovered in the centre of a shop, who decided to build up the well to reconstruct what it may have looked like. And it still stands in that shop as its centrepiece. But one of the most surprising finds in recent years were the tunnels. Tunnels that no one still fully knows where they run to. There is good evidence to suggest they connect each and every building up Bow Street. However, other theories suggest they also connect the Lyceum direct to the bombed out church. And the reasons for that have been rumoured to be that the slave trade, once abolished, carried on. And these tunnels made a perfect hideaway for slaves that were brought in overnight. The merchants who would gather the money from the sale of these slaves were members, maybe, of the Lyceum. And if there was ever a police raid, they could simply go down one of these tunnels, emerge at the bombed out church, which of course at that time was not bombed out. It was actually St. Luke's Church, and make their merry way to freedom. The other way round, we have rumours of people who faked their own death, were buried in a casket, which had a sliding door, allowing them access to a tunnel direct to the Lyceum, where they would be sneaked to the dock overnight and start a new life elsewhere. The one fact we know is that the tunnels were secret. One highly debated rumour is they were used for something much, much darker. A decade ago, a group of urban explorers went down one of these tunnels, which would adjoin the opposite shop. And in ink on the wall, on one of the archways, it said, "Do not enter. This is the entrance to hell." And it was dated 1964. Underneath that, in a blue ink, was an arrow pointing to the above statement, saying, "Please pay attention. This is true." And that was dated 1976. And that particular example is not legend or handed down tale. There are photographs of those daubings on the wall. So secret tunnels, that part is proven. The reason for them, that remains unproven. But what is not unproven is the feeling people report when they walk down Bow Street or up Bow Street, on the cobbles, on the road, in the broad light of day. I've experienced this myself, not necessarily what we're about to talk about, but the feeling that something is slightly misaligned. You see, Bow Street has become known worldwide for something else entirely. Not just hauntings, but time slips. Moments where the past doesn't stay buried, but very briefly returns. Now, as usual on Dark Realms, we're going to feature a trio of dark tales around this particular dark realm, and Bow Street will be no different. But before we go into our break, a brief dark chronology. So, the late 1700s, rope works dominate the land, feeding Liverpool's growing maritime power. 1780s, Jonas Bold leases the land, and Bold Street begins to take shape. The early 1800s, the Lyceum opens, a centre, allegedly, of intellect, influence, and quiet exclusivity. 1811 to 1832, St. Luke's Church is built, towering over the new expanding city. 1864, Liverpool publicly supports the Confederate South, long after abolition. 1941, St. Luke's is bombed, and it's left as a ruin, preserved as a memorial to the terror of war. And in 2001, a shop renovation reveals a hidden well beneath the street, a fragment of something older. Later that decade, further renovations on further shops reveal networks of tunnels. And that brings us to present day. Bow Street is a thriving hub of activity, but the past seems just as close as the present. Okay, guys, I need to talk to you about money. Why? Well, it's high on my agenda at the moment as I'm looking to move not just house, but country. So I have a money goal that I'm really striving to achieve. And let's just say, to say I've got some way to go is an understatement. But I'm trying not to fixate on where my money is now, because so many people are focused on where their money is today. Acorns is the financial wellness app that cares about where your money's going tomorrow. And something I think is wonderful that Acorns have is the Acorns Potential Screen, so you can find out what your money is capable of. You guys know I've worked with Acorns for a while, and the reason I love working with them is because they take away the scare factor from investing. But in reality, investment and investing should mean the same for one person as it does for the next. Acorns is a smart way to give your money a chance to grow. It's easy. You can sign up in minutes and start automatically investing your spare money, even if all you've got is spare change. Acorns is an all-in-one. No more finance apps cluttering up your phone. With Acorns, you can invest, save, and give your money a chance to grow in one trusted place. Sign up now and Acorns will boost your new account with a $5 bonus investment. Join the over 14 million all-time customers who've already saved and invested over $27 billion with Acorns. Paid on client endorsements. Compensation provides incentive to positively promote Acorns. Tier 2 compensation provided. Potential subject to various factors such as customers' accounts, age, and investment settings. Does not include Acorns fees. Results do not predict or represent the performance of any Acorns portfolio. Investment results will vary. Investing involves risk. Acorn Advisors LLC, an SEC-registered investment advisor. View important disclosures at acorns.com/darkparanormal. We begin our look at the paranormal side of Bow Street with a very unoriginal name, The Watcher. Too simple. The story is simple, and that's what makes it linger. Back in the day, the Café Tabac, which still sits at the top end of Bow Street, was a far cry from the try-too-hard, try-too-little bohemian tightrope it currently walks today. It was still the Tabac. It was just more Liverpool. Cab drivers getting cheap cups of tea. a place cheap enough to eat that it attracted the starving artists in the city. Liverpool actress Margie Clark in the 80s, with the cafe's permission, even gave the Tabac's phone number as her agent's phone number. But late one evening, a worker inside the cafe described something he saw. "I saw an elderly man in Edwardian dress, standing at the top of the stairs. No movement, no sound, just watching. I looked away for a moment, and when I looked back, he was gone. I heard no footsteps, there is no door there, there's no explanation. And it doesn't stop there. There are similar accounts surfacing again and again, year on year, decade on decade, figures in outdated clothing, seen in very ordinary places. The edge of your vision on staircases, in doorways, reflected briefly in glass. Not drifting, not transparent, just there. As though they belong. And then they don't. What makes this different from your typical haunting is the stillness. No interaction, no awareness. These figures do not react. They don't acknowledge the observer, but they still seem sentient. It's as if they're not the ones out of place. You are. And they're just curious. Now, many of you guys out there will already know my little scary tale with the Tabac. But I will share that at the end for those interested, just in case anyone's already heard it and doesn't want to go through it again. But next, we will look at Bow Street's most infamous phenomena. Bow Street is widely regarded as one of the UK's most consistent locations for alleged time slips. Not ghosts, not echoes, entire environments shifting. One witness describes stepping out near the Lyceum. In a split second, everything changed. People in old clothes, different shops. I didn't recognize anything. And it was then I realized something was very wrong. There were horse-drawn vehicles, different signs, different sounds. It was a street that no longer was recognizable. And then, just as suddenly, it came back to the Bow Street I know. Perhaps the most well-known account is that of a man named Frank. Frank was a former police officer, grounded, observant, not prone to fantasy. He described walking into a bookshop, only to find it wasn't a bookshop at all. It was a clothing store. Old stock, a different layout. He looked outside and the street had shifted too. Different cars, different people, a different time. He ran back outside and everything returned, like nothing had ever happened. But the most unsettling version involves a young man running down a side street. He turns a corner and everything changes. No signal on his phone, no recognizable landmarks. Just a version of the city that didn't belong to him. He panicked, turned back and ran. And when he emerged from where he entered, it was all normal again. Later, the security guard searching for him said, "I turned the corner and he just disappeared. I've no answer for it." He wasn't lost. He wasn't hidden. He was gone. And that's the thing about these time slips of Bow Street, because in the over 600 episodes I've done under the umbrella of the dark paranormal, be it on this feed or Patreon, not once have I heard of a ghost taking you to another realm physically, causing you to disappear from this one. But a place might. Our final tale is the one that stays with people, because it crosses a line the others don't. One night a family has stood near the bombed-out church one winter evening. The air's cold, the lights fading. Their young daughter is wandering ahead. Christmas revelers are in full swing, the streets vibrant after it became pedestrianized. The couple, noticing their girl was out of earshot, start a conversation about her upcoming gifts, whether they bought correctly given the ever-changing mind of a young child, and then agreeing there was not much they could do about it now anyway, so they look up, and she's no longer in sight. There was nowhere she could have went. Panic took over instantly. They shouted her name. They searched the alleyways. They checked every doorway, every open shop. And then the mother heard something. Something that took a few moments to register, but once it did, it was clear what it was. Music. Specifically, organ music. Church organ music. And without doubt, it was coming from the inside of the closed and pitch black, bombed out church. A church with no roof, no congregation, no lights, and certainly no organ. With an instinct she couldn't explain, the mother told her husband to follow her to the church. Though, as they were about to sprint, a man appears from seemingly thin air on the steps of the church. He's tall, dressed in all black, wearing a top hat, and he's holding the child's hand. He approaches them calmly and says, "Please accept my sincere apology for any distress caused." The stunned parents grip the hand of their daughter and pull her close. The man nods, turns, and walks back to the ruins. Later, the girl tells her parents what happened. She said an old woman had crouched, smiled, and asked her if she liked music. The girl nodded. The old lady reached out her hand. The girl refused to extend hers. The old lady grabbed her wrist anyway and forcefully pulled her inside the bombed-out church. Once inside, the girl looked around. There were people, lots of them, all standing in a circle, all dressed, as she put it, strangely. They were all perfectly still, watching her in silence. Every time she was about to scream, the woman stood behind her seemed to know and would cover her mouth. That detail matters, because this isn't a sighting. This isn't a glimpse, it's contact. Contact with something that's inside that ruin, behaving as if it still belongs. Seemingly still occupied, seemingly still active. And seemingly, for a brief moment at least, trying to keep someone. Bold Street is not just a place, it's a layering. Rope works, slavery, wealth, war, ruin, reinvention, and perhaps something else. Because if Bold Street is a place where time appears unstable above ground, then whatever lies beneath it is much more than an empty space. Of course, none of the tales we've told today are completely provable or tangible in any way, other than word of mouth. But all the stories lead to the same thought. On Bold Street, the past doesn't stay buried. It waits. It breathes. It's present. And this is where we end our little tour of my hometown's most famous street when it comes to the paranormal. Now, if you've heard the tale of me and the Café Tabac, I bid you farewell, and I will speak to you soon. But if you haven't, I will very briefly explain something which is not necessarily paranormal, but potentially could be, I'm not sure, but I'll be quick. Basically, back when the tobacco was the tobacco, it was a place of, as I say, people going in for cheap coffees and food. I was 16 years of age, and I was auditioning for a part in a play to play John Lennon, a young John Lennon, of course. Now, I'd only spoken to the director over the phone, and when I turned up for a cast meet at the tobacco, he was a bit took back at how frail I looked, or should I say, how slim I looked. He said I sounded much older on the phone, so I wasn't cast the part. But he was good enough to tell me that right away. Anyway, I stayed, we enjoyed the night, and as I do, I started on the topic of ghosts. I should say prior to this, Mark, the director, had introduced us all once I arrived, and we sat in a circle. And he kind of gestured to my left and said, "And Steve does the music." So we all raise our glasses to each other, we carry on with the night, and I, of course, ask if anyone has any good ghost stories, always looking for a good scare. And they did, and I was terrified. When it came time to leave, everyone piled out. I was going to Lime Street Station. Everyone else was either driving or they were going to Central Station, which is actually off Bold Street, and, interestingly, is one of the theories regarding the time slip, i.e. there is a large electrical loop that runs directly under Bold Street. Anyway, I'm stood waving them off, having a cigarette, and Steve, the man to my left, comes out. He hasn't said a word all night, by the way. And he says, "Did you say you live in Highton?" And I said, "Yeah." He says, "So do I. Do you want a lift?" Now, of course, 16 years old, it's about 11:30 at night. Yes, I do. So I get in Steve's car, and he starts rubbing his chin and says, "So do you believe in all of that then?" And I said, "The paranormal?" "Yeah, 100%. And he then starts rubbing his chin and looking side to side. And I was kind of like, "Are you okay?" And he says, "I am. I really want to tell you something, but I don't want to pass it on to you." So obviously, being an over-exuberant teenager into the paranormal, I'm begging to know what he's got to say. So he says to me, "Okay, but you mustn't tell anyone." He didn't know 30 years down the line I'd have a podcast where I'd be telling all you guys, but he went on to tell me one of the most terrifying things I've ever heard. And I was freaked out even more when I received an email from someone who said they'd had a very similar experience, although they lived in a different country many years ago. But Steve said he took his family to Glastonbury for a holiday, not during the festival, and he had, at the time, a VCR video recorder. And he was filming his family as they were playing around, and he noticed up on Glastonbury Tor a number of figures dressed in white circling the Tor itself. The Tor being the tall hill with the Tor itself like a circular castle sort of looking thing, for want of a much better explanation, walking around that. So, to try out his camera, he looks at them and he tries to zoom in. At one point, he realizes they've all stopped and have turned to look at him, so he moves his camera back down to his kids. Thinks nothing more of it. When he arrives home, there's a hand-posted letter. No postmark, no stamp, no address, and inside it are dead insects. Thinking it's just some idiots playing a trick, he forgets about that too, carries on with his normal day, and at some point his wife says, "Let's watch back the holiday video." And they do. Now, at the point where Steve zooms in to these people walking round the tour, the video turns black and white, flips upside down on the television screen they're watching it on, and shows Steve and his family. And then it goes off. He said that they were all freaked out, they rewatched it and they rewatched it. And from then, things started to happen. His daughter said she would see a blue light outside of her bedroom window every night. There would be poltergeist-esque activity happening around the house. However, this is where it got particularly scary for me, because Steve then started to get a little bit strange and said And then things started happening. Like, I would pull up at a set of lights, and the last three initials on a registration plate would be the initials of someone I hate. And at this point, I thought, uh-oh, this is beyond the paranormal now. And by the time we reached close to my house, I didn't want this man to know where I lived. I was that afraid. So I said, I'll get out anywhere here. And I ran home, genuinely saying the Hail Mary out loud. I was that terrified. The next day, I called Mark, the director, to thank him for being so polite and upfront about saying, sorry, you haven't got the part, and still having a great night anyway. Now, mid-conversation, I said, that Steve fella is a bit intense. And he asked me what I meant. And I said, Steve, the musician. He said, Steve wasn't there last night. I said, he was. He gave me a lift home. I said, you gestured to him, to my left. To which point Mark says, oh, him. He was there when we turned up. He was on his own. So, that was the day Kev could have been kidnapped. But his story is definitely one that still sends chills down my spine. It's the most terrified I've ever been in my life, and I'm still unsure which part scares me more, the paranormal or the person. But thank you for staying this long if you have, and I will speak to you shortly for our next minisode. Until then, stay safe and take care.